Hi, my name is Justin, and I'm an addict. And thanks to my God, the steps, and the fellowship of other addicts, I'm sober one day at a time since June 19th, 2015. And for that, I am beyond grateful. Welcome to the RICO 12 speaker meeting. We are an organization whose addictions include alcohol, drugs, lust and sex, food and gambling, just to name a few. We come together from all places, faiths, and backgrounds to learn the similarities of addiction and to gain tools and hope from others who are walking a similar path. We invite recovering addicts with at least 1 year sobriety and who are actively working their recovery in their respective fellowships to share their experience, strength, and hope on a live Zoom meeting each Friday at noon Central Time for 20 to 25 minutes. Then we, the live audience, get the opportunity to ask questions of the speaker for another 20 to 25 minutes. In order to ask questions, please type them in the Q&A link at the bottom of your Zoom window if you're here live. Now, if you're listening to in podcast form and it's recorded and would like to participate as a live audience member in the future so you can ask questions, or if you'd like to be a guest speaker in a future meeting, please go to www.RICO12.com to learn more and to submit your email address there to receive weekly invitations or to submit to become a guest speaker. We're booking dates in February right now for guest speakers, so we're doing pretty well with guest speakers, and we're really grateful for that. Have some great speakers, and today is no exception. RICO 12 is an ad-free service, and we appreciate your help in keeping it that way. We gratefully accept contributions to help cover the cost of the Zoom platform, podcast platform, web hosting, and administrative costs. To contribute, you can go to RICO12.com/support. Or you can click in the link to PayPal in the chat of the live meeting when I get that posted there. When you contribute, please specify the meeting number. This is meeting number 24. And if you have found value in RICO 12, please take a minute to go to the podcast platform of your choosing and leave a rating and review. It helps us work our 12th step by carrying the message of recovery to more addicts who suffer. Last week's meeting was with Bill M., an alcoholic with 33 years sobriety. He talked about the difference between sobriety and recovery and a bit about cross addiction. It was a fun conversation. And if you haven't yet heard that meeting, go and check it out. It'll be well worth your time. Now I'd like to introduce our guest speaker for today, Harvey E. Harvey E. has fast become one of my best friends. He is a sexaholic with nearly 7 years sobriety. And since he and I first met, and I remember the date, I looked it up today on December 10th, 2019 via Zoom for an interview I did with him for the Journey Through Life podcast. He has been instrumental in the current phase of my recovery and in the idea and initial development of the RICO 12 speaker meeting. He was the first guest speaker for this, the RICO 12 project, back on June 19th, 2020, and I am grateful that he was able and willing to fill in this week for a spot that unexpectedly came open. Harvey will be speaking to us today on a catchy title that I identify with all too well. It is, I got this. Oops. I'm looking forward to this talk and think it will be very helpful for many. Harvey, I will share that prayer here on the screen, and then the floor will be yours. Just a second. Okay, can you see it?
Yep.
All right, floor is yours, Harvey.
All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm Harvey E. in Toronto, and I am a grateful recovering sexaholic, a good person worthy of recovery, and a child of God. I'd like to start my talk with a prayer, as you see on the screen, that I say with my sponsees whenever we start our work together. It's known as a set-aside prayer, and it's about precisely that. We need to set aside all the things we think we know, and to be honest with ourselves, to be willing to do the work, and open-minded enough to be teachable. So I'm going to say the prayer. It's the wee version. Dear God, please set aside anything we think we know about ourselves, about our disease, about the big book, the 12 steps, the program, the fellowship, the people in the fellowship, and all spiritual terms, especially you, God, so that we may have an open mind and a new experience with all of these things. Please help us to see the truth. Amen. So, as an introduction, I'd like to suggest there are really three categories of relapsers. As you can tell, this topic is about relapsing. So number one, there's the relapser who's a newcomer. He doesn't even know he's really a relapser because he's never worked the program. So he doesn't know anything about steps 1 to 3, And, but of course, he's probably tried to stop often, almost every day like me, but he can't stay stopped. Then there's the second category, and that's the relapser who has done at least the first three steps in our program, but is still not enjoying the sobriety and freedom that should be available to him at that point. And finally, I want to speak very briefly about the relapser who has tasted the joys of recovery, often for years, but relapses, and he falls back after years in the program. So I hope to address these three different types in my talk today. So first, let's talk about the newcomer who comes into the rooms, usually very sad, broken, full of consequences that have led him to seek help. He's in active addiction, doesn't even know what slips and relapses are about. Most of these come in believing that they are just weak and say, if only I was stronger, more devout, more devoted, had more fear of consequences, etc., I'd stay sober. I just need to strengthen my willpower. I just need to tough it out. And they usually have stories to back that up. Heck, I was able to stay sober for a few months last year, right? So when we examine the willpower method of stopping, we realize a few things. Number one, willpower is really endurance, not strength. The urge to lust isn't a boulder that I wish I were strong enough to push away. It's more like a hot iron being pressed against my leg that I need to endure until it is taken away. My willpower is finite, as I am. Sometimes I can grit my teeth and get through it. Other times, I'm running on fumes. Many people, especially ecclesiastical leaders, will suggest, or try to, that willpower can be infinite if it's bolstered by right beliefs. If my reasons for stopping are strong enough, I will be able to push through the pain. For me, I have to say, I often relapsed, even while holding on to those strong beliefs, in spite of my own best interest. It was as if I were punishing myself. Doing what was best for me didn't seem to be important. I was running towards self-destruction. Being in a position to constantly withstand the pain or discomfort was a really crappy way to live. Let's face it. So my willpower wasn't addressing the real issue. Like most addicts, I tried to stop even before I even knew I was an addict, but I relapsed almost daily. When I examined my pattern of acting out, some important truths came to me. I identified seven different relapse types and what they were trying to tell me. And they're probably trying to tell you that the same way. Here they are, and with a few examples of how they play out. Number one, desperation relapse. And here's an example. My girlfriend has decided we weren't for each other, and the job promotion I had been working toward went to another member of my team. I couldn't get either disappointment out of my mind, and it eventually became too much, and I started lusting to try to forget. I faced an intense and overpowering pain, and I needed to escape. Number two, overconfidence relapse. It's a big one. I came off a really serious acting out binge, and after 4 days, I started to get my energy back. I came out of the fog. I felt human again. Then that little voice crept in. You're doing so well, Harvey. You got this thing under control. The problem isn't lust. It's your wife. It's your job. You can pick any justification you like. Man, just control yourself and you can drink like a gentleman. But of course, 3 minutes quickly turns to 3 hours and eventually to 3 days. Evidently, I still linked feeling good or celebrating to sex. I decided that the positives of lusting outweighed the negatives. I can get the good parts and avoid the bad. Number three, rage relapse. Someone I trusted betrayed me. He told somebody about something that I had secretly told him. I was so angry, I aggressively drove to the nearest bathhouse. I used the acting out to reassert myself. Number four, overwhelm relapse. I was behind on my rent. I kept screwing up at work. I missed an important appointment. Anxiety completely took me over and my body shrank down. I needed to put everything on hold. I had too much on my plate, a lot of small things that wouldn't have been a huge deal all piled up on top of each other, creating an avalanche. Too many problems, only one solution. Number five, social pressure relapse. I was sober for a few months. I went home for Thanksgiving to visit my parents, met up with friends I used to hang out with. I hadn't told them about my sobriety and was pretty nervous to share anything about it. The evening turned to visiting a strip joint, and the rest is history. The fear of being rejected is very strong. I wanted to be one of the guys. Saying no would weird everyone out. Six, revenge relapse. After a particularly intense fight with my wife, I began to entertain thoughts of divorce. I stormed out of the room, got on my computer, and watched porn, hoping she'd come in, see me, and that would incite round two. Fear around the state of the relationship made me feel like I'd lost control. So I tried to regain that sense of control. I can do whatever I want. Secretly, I was really hoping she'd decide to help rebuild our caring relationship. Finally, number seven is perfectionist relapse. I missed my morning readings. I forgot to bring my lunch. I lost my temper with a colleague at work. I got home from work, was too tired to exercise, decided not to make a call to speak to my mom, just didn't have it in me. Then the negative talk started. Man, you're a loser. You are so bad at life. High expectations of myself always led to disappointment, which ended in toxic shame. All of these have a common thread. They all relate to intense emotional distress. So when I came into the program, I was living my life on self-will. And as the big book says, it's self-will run riot. I was a spoiled brat. I wanted what I wanted when I wanted it. And I didn't want what I didn't want. I usually blamed everyone else for anything that didn't go my way or that I just screwed up. I didn't take responsibility for myself. I didn't really connect to myself or anyone else either, especially my higher power. My life lacked structure and discipline. I hated that intense emotional distress that plagued me almost constantly. In order to change my life, I needed to change my life. How did I do that? Well, when I got into the rooms, I had friends. Eventually, it took me a few weeks, but eventually I had friends in the room who encouraged me to change my routine. And here's a few ideas that were recommended to Harvey, the newcomer. Number one, get up a bit earlier than you generally do. Use that extra time to do the following: pray, meditate, read some recovery literature, journal morning and night. Give yourself some positive affirmations through the day. Add some discipline to your life. And as Benjamin Hardy, who was a speaker here not so long ago, he speaks and he talks about discipline weighs ounces, regret weighs tons. And that's so true for me. The other thing they offered was an idea about doing gratitude lists. Another one is doing some self-care, which could involve personal hygiene, exercise, watching my diet, getting off of sugars. During the rest of the day, they recommended taking a few minutes every few hours to pause, to breathe, to pray, if I can, make a call to other addicts, and to a sponsor once I got one. That took a little while. And I had to get to meetings. Of course, meetings don't keep you sober. Phone calls don't really keep you sober. But both of these do help us learn to be vulnerable, to be honest, to exercise the honesty muscle many of us have not used in years. And they give the newcomer a feeling of belonging, a feeling of positive self-worth. A stranger who's not charging for their time has no ulterior motive whatsoever, just a willingness to be there for the newcomer. What a new feeling that is for many of us, and it certainly was for me. A lot of the early Step Zero stuff I did was about doing just that. The self-care and the new connections I make in the rooms and through calls helped me start to believe I was worth it, that I had value, and that the negative self-talk wasn't accurate. The Step Zero changes I made in my life were also feeding my spiritual self with the vitamins that helped that part of me get stronger. Because just as the body needs certain nutrients and develops symptoms when it is deficient in any essential nutrient, so too, the spirit needs its nutrients. If the spirit is deprived of its essential nutrients, it too develops symptoms, the most prominent of which is unhappiness and discontent, restlessness. This is not depression, and it's not helped by antidepressant medication. A person may indeed find that religion strengthens one's spirituality, But that's only if one's religious behavior goes beyond superficial rituals. To be truly spiritual, a person must have an ulterior goal in life, must be compassionate, must be considerate, must be humble, must give of oneself to help others, must control one's anger, must forgive, must be meticulously honest, and must make ethical and moral choices, often defying strong desires and cravings. So that's the first category, newcomer. Let's talk about the addict who's done at least the first three steps. He's an addict. He realizes that he's powerless against this addiction and that his life is unmanageable. Basically, he's working on smashing his ego. That's step one. In step two, he's come to believe in a God who can restore him to sanity, a God who loves him unconditionally, a God he can trust, he can finally trust, to run the world for his best interest. I've heard a triad of slogans that I'd like to share, which I learned to appreciate when I did my step two. The first one is, "It is what it is." This reminds me that the circumstances of my life in this very moment are what they are, and they are exactly as God meant them to be. It is of no use to fret over them. The second is, "You are who you are," speaks of the awesome greatness of my God. He is the great I am. He can handle any situation that is confronting me. The third one is, "I am who I am." And that tells me that I am exactly who God wants me to be in this very moment. It doesn't mean that I don't have character defects that need to be changed. It just means that today I accept where I am in the process. It is what it is. You are who you are. I am who I am. Great slogans to remember on the road to recovery. So in step three, the addict surrenders his thoughts and his actions, his life, to that power he found in step two. The surrender in the third step, when we replace our will with the will of our higher power, places us into his care. That's what relieves us of the insanity of our addiction, no matter what it might be. Relapse at this stage is going to fit into one of two groups. And I label these two groups a first step problem or a second step problem. Let me explain. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, our basic text, our Bible, so to speak, it describes taking the first three steps as building an arch through which the addict will walk to freedom. The first step is called the foundation stone, the second step, the cornerstone, and the third step is the keystone of that arch. So it's pretty easy to see. Let's look at ourselves as masons. If either of the two sides of the arch are undermined, if the foundation or the cornerstone is disturbed or removed, if we've skimped on the mortar, the arch collapses. The keystone ends up on the ground. So if I relapse because I take back my self-will, my ego takes over, that's a first step problem. Any relapse that relates to my wanting to take back control or involves complacency or thinking I've got the power is a step one problem. If I decide I can lust like a gentleman, that's a step one issue. If I think I can hang on to a few little bottles like lusting after my wife, that's a step one problem. In the seven types of relapse that we discussed before, can you see which ones fit into this group? Well, overconfidence relapse for one. I think perfectionism relapse, and probably revenge relapse. Step two relapses happen because my relationship to God is still not where it needs to be. If I haven't found a God that loves me unconditionally, or that I can trust to want to only do the best for me, and I really don't have a step two. That will result in issues around fear of rejection, fear of abandonment, fear of failure, fear of inadequacy, fear of losing control of my life, overwhelming fear of life's trials and tribulation, fear of what others might think of me. In all of these, I've lost my God connection. I've made someone or something my higher power. Which of the relapse types that we spoke about fits into this group? So I would say social pressure relapse, desperation relapse, and overwhelm relapse. So this program requires that we be vigilant and watch out for warning signs that we may be heading for a slip or a relapse. I thought I'd share a few of those. You can certainly review your own experience and add to this list. Number one, the acronym SLIP stands for Sobriety Loses Its Priority. Number two, famous line that we always say in this program, half measures avail us nothing. And I say full measures half time avail us nothing. Number three, not bringing things to the light. Being full of shame and not sharing things is a big mistake. Four, I can handle this attitude. Five, falling into other addictive behaviors using food, playing video games. Six, engaging in negative self-talk. Seven, minimizing and justifying. Eight, isolating. Ooh, huge for me. Nine, testing computer filters to see if they work. And finally, number 10, this is another one, from big, huge one for me, is playing the victim. I was a tremendously, really, really super, super victim. So I have also identified five attitudes that, when we adopt them, can help us not to slip. So I'm going to read them now, talk about them a little bit. Attitude one, sobriety must come first for me. The member who tries to make the recovery program a second or third class hobby usually has trouble. We have a number one problem, and we have to treat it as such. Attitude two, I will suffer this pain. It will pass. Even if I die now, I will die sober. This kind of nervous or painful condition is similar to most addicts. Some who have been dry many years have to put up with it from time to time. They recognize the situation, however, and know that the feeling will pass. Newer members may not be so sure, but they should resolve not to drink, even if they're going to die on the spot. Not many addicts actually die in this manner, but when you are willing to die for your sobriety, you'll probably stay sober. Attitude three is, I will suffer any embarrassment for my sobriety. I've suffered terrible embarrassment in the past because of my lusting and my acting out. If I, quote, drink again, I will suffer still greater embarrassment in the future. So why not suffer a little embarrassment for sobriety? I will refuse that hit, even if a dozen people point to me with scorn. Even if I fall down in confusion and disgrace, I will not act out. Actually, the frightful embarrassment with which the addict mentally wrestles practically never occurs. But he or she must be prepared for it. If he resolves to die of embarrassment rather than to take a drink, he'll almost certainly stay sober. Attitude four, sobriety must be earned. Sobriety cannot be bought with money. Many of us tried that to no avail. Lots of therapy, rehab, very costly rehab. But sobriety does have its price. And if we try to buy it too cheaply, it may elude us. Hence, if I attend two meetings a week and do not get sober, I have to know that I have to step up my program maybe to four or five meetings a week. This intensification of activity has particular applicability to members who have been around some time with limited success. They may be trying to buy sobriety too cheaply. It usually can't be done. Sure, there's a guy in my meeting, Joe, he stays dry without going to many meetings. And some of those guys even stay dry on their own without a sponsor. But what does that have to do with me? Attitude five, try to put greater emphasis on personal contact with that higher power. And some new members may not be ready for that step because they may either be atheists or they're carrying a lot of resentment to the God of their faith-based background. Some of us who enjoy sobriety ask that higher power, we pray them every morning, for grace to get through another day. No matter what happens, don't let me take that first drink today. No matter what happens. At night, we give thanks for the day just gone, and we look forward to the morrow, humbly asking him for 24 more hours of sincerity, sobriety, and serenity. We ask his help tomorrow to improve the quality as well as to increase the quantity of our sobriety. So I have just a few words to say about the third category of slippers. These are the long-term sober members who worked their program, got sober, did step 12, really changed their lives. Then one day, they just burned out. Maybe it happened gradually. They stopped going to meetings. They didn't troll for new sponsees when they finished taking their last one through the steps. Maybe they got complacent about their step 11 and stopped studying scripture or doing other spiritual activities that were meant to grow their relationship to their higher power. And as it says in the big book, when discussing the maintenance steps 10 on page 85, it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and to rest on our laurels. But we are headed for trouble if we do, for lust is a subtle foe. We are not cured of sexaholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. So in closing, I just want to thank my Father in heaven for the opportunity to share my program with you and to continue my efforts to be an intelligent agent, a spearhead of God's ever-advancing creation. And I would like to close with the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Thank you for letting me share with you and for allowing me to be here today. And I pass.
Thank you so much, Harvey. I really appreciate that. There were several things that were that you did kind of a deep dive into that really helped me a ton. And I really appreciate that. Before we get to the question and answer portion of this meeting, which a quick reminder to those who are here live, if you would like to ask a question of our speaker, Harvey, please type it in the Q&A portion, the Q&A link at the bottom of your Zoom window. Looks like two speech bubbles over each other. But before we get to that, Harvey, I would invite you to take just a minute and share about the fellowship or fellowships that you attend and how they help you in your life.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that question. So I am a grateful member of SA, and I have been since 2014 when my new therapist invited me to start going to meetings. He lives in Houston, so he didn't know what was available here. He said, any S meeting will do, and I ended up in SA, and I think that's where I belong. And I went to a lot of meetings at the beginning, didn't even take off my coat and my jacket at the beginning because I was so frightened, didn't share my phone number for the first 3 weeks. But I, became a regular member of SA, didn't find a sponsor for 9 months. And then I went into a place, there was a time in my life where I was on house arrest. So I wasn't available to go out to as many meetings as I used to go to. So I got into phone meetings. At the time, there was no Zoom meetings, but now there are. But I did a lot of phone meetings, and I became a moderator for phone meetings. And that really became my home meeting for a good couple of years, certainly 2 or 3 years, probably. The noon meeting on SA, and I'm still part of that that fellowship. I moderate a afternoon meeting, the Pacific noon meeting on Fridays. So in another 2 hours, I'll be doing that, and. And then about a year and a half ago, as a result of meeting some members of an ARP support program, which you may or may not be familiar with, but they were looking for people with at least a year's sobriety. And I had at the time 5.5 years, that I guess at that point, or maybe 6. They asked me if I could be one of their callers, one of the people they called. And I said, sure. So I became a regular person who got called by the ARP support men that were doing their program. And one of them invited me to an SAL meeting. And the rest is history, as I would say. I became a regular. I usually do Tuesdays, Sunday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. And I love I love the fellowship. I love the unabashed understanding that God is in these rooms. They don't apologize. They don't hide it. They don't keep it a secret. And I just love that. And there's some wonderful, really some amazing men in that program. And I'm really grateful for that, that Heavenly Father has brought me to that room. That's really where I am mostly these days. And I really appreciate all of the experience and the connections that I've found there. So that actually, I guess that answers your question.
Yes, thank you very much, Harvey. I appreciate that. Now, I will start off the Q&A section here. I've got a couple of questions here. And once again, everybody in the live audience, please type in any questions you have. We're excited to hear more from the wisdom and experience, strength, and hope of Harvey. So one of the things you mentioned in your talk here, Harvey, you said one of the things that needs to happen is to exercise the honesty muscle. That's one of the first things that needs to do, like a step zero type thing. What does that look like at first in the life of an addict who has been, well, hiding and isolating and self-victimizing and whatever else for so many years? How does exercising that honesty muscle look?
Well, so before I got into the rooms, I like to talk about it as kind of Harvey had a whole series of holograms of Harvey. Harvey the father, Harvey the son, Harvey the holy, no, Harvey, the, couldn't resist, Harvey the husband, that's the Holy Ghost, Harvey the dentist, which is what I do for a living, Harvey the member of my religious group, and Harvey the, all kinds of different Harveys, so none of whom were really the Harvey that I was really meant to be. They were all holograms, they were all fakes. And they all resorted to lying in order to be who I thought they wanted me to be. So I lied consistently all the time. I would lie to exaggerate stories because I wanted to impress. Even for no good reason at all, I would lie. So I was abject. You know, they say in the addiction world that you can always tell when an addict is lying when his lips are moving. So that was me. And it was an extremely exhausted life because keeping all those lies juggled up in the air is very, very tiring. And I was tired all the time because I was doing that. So when I got into the room, the first thing I noticed was, here I am in a room full of men who don't judge me for who I am, you know, who are there, who understand, who I don't have to explain all of this to. They just get it. And I felt very, very safe, probably for almost the first time in my life, certainly in my memory. And that gave me the power to be honest, to be vulnerable, and to share. And that's what I started to do at meetings, and that's what I started to do at phone calls. And it comes with experience. You start actually getting comfortable doing it with the real people in your life. My wife, for instance, you know, that took work because, you know, I've always felt judged. I always worried that she's going to not understand me. And today, you know, I have a higher power who defines who I am. So I don't make my wife my higher power. So even if she doesn't understand me, or even if she judges me, I can go to my room, get on my knees. Sometimes I have to, and pray that God reminds me that he's my higher power, not her. So that's what I would say about honesty.
I love that. And I think that making someone or something else my higher power, in fact, you mentioned something about that. I'm going to go, I wrote down something. How can one recognize when they have made someone or something else their higher power? I think it's so easy to slip into, especially someone who's been in active addiction for so long and is just now starting to say, I've got to do something about this. So how do I recognize that if and when that happens?
So it as in the third step, in the big book, just before the prayer on page 63, it talks about some of the promises that we get in the third step. And one of those is we lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. So the red flag that I look for is coming back to fear. If suddenly I feel fear around what somebody thinks of me, or how somebody is judging me, or what somebody might do as a result of what I've done or what I've said, I've made that person my higher power. And that's the number one way of, if I have to be so, so cognizant of those feelings of fear in my life. I can't, if I go to fear, I know that I'm no longer talking to God. I'm no longer connected to God. I've unplugged. I have to get it. This room is my room. So I go into this room, I close my door, I get on my knees and say, God, I've done it again. I unplugged. Please help me. I got to plug back in because I don't like this feeling. This fear sucks.
Awesome. One thing that my wife has, it's a saying she brought up, and she probably heard it somewhere else, but either way, I'm going to give her credit for it because I haven't heard it anywhere else before her. When she's feeling anxious or fearful or worried about something, her little motto or mantra is, I have an audience of one, of capital O, one. And that one is always proud of me and always cheering me on and always loving me. And that's something that brings me a lot of peace when I hear that and when I copy it, because I've incorporated it into my own life too. Anyways, we have a question came in from Ryan. Ryan says, hey, Harvey, can you talk about what it was like going from living in numbness to living with feeling for a minute?
All right. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Ryan, for that question. One of the hallmarks of addiction, I think, is the lack of connection to ourselves. And that was certainly true about me. I was not connected to me. And that meant for me doing everything I could to hide, to escape from emotions. And I believe that as a human, God has created us with emotions, with the ability to feel things. And I use four that I talk about. There's joy, which is nice. There's fear. There's sadness. And there's anger. And those are the four feelings that most of us feel, if we can. And I couldn't, I didn't even like joy. I certainly didn't like anger. I certainly didn't like fear. And sadness sucked too. So whenever I started to feel any of those things, those emotional feelings that we talked about during the relapse conversation, those seven relapse things are all about emotional distress. And whenever I felt those emotional things of distress, I escaped because I didn't like them. And I would stuff those feelings down in my pants and wow, if they didn't come up a little later. But learning to get into the program and appreciate that I didn't have to fear anymore the feelings, and I needed to process and connect with them, was very important. My therapist helped me realize that I could use the choreography of my body. I close my eyes when I feel something and get a sense of what's going on in my body. If I'm feeling anger, are my fists tight? Is my face muscles very taut and my ears red? Are my shoulders up? If I'm feeling sadness, are my shoulders hunched, down, sort of, my muscles and my face are weak. There's choreography going on in my body that tells me the feelings that I'm having. And those were really important because I hadn't had feelings for so long. I didn't really understand what feelings were about. So getting in touch with the choreography of my body was really helpful in realizing that sometimes I might actually be feeling anger and sadness at the same time, because there's a combination of stuff going on in my body. It's not just one feeling, and that's true. Many times I'm going to have more than one feeling. So once I get in touch with the feeling, whether it's anger or sadness or whatever, fear, then I can process it. For instance, in anger, if I'm having an anger, feeling angry or frustrated or irritated about something, it's usually because a boundary has been broken. When I feel that anger, I say, wait a minute, what's going on here? Has somebody stepped on my toe? Has somebody stepped on my emotional toes? And what do I need to do about it? And boundaries is another thing that, of course, I certainly didn't have a very good sense of what boundaries were about or how to put them up and enforce them. So today I can say, you know what, you crossed my boundary and that's not okay. And be safe enough to be able to say that to a person or get to a point where I can accept that there's nothing I can do. She's 99 years old. She's my mother. And I have to accept the fact that she's never going to change. But at least I've done the work. I processed the feeling that I had. She's crossed that boundary again. And then I can say, you know what? She's 99 years old. She's been through hell. She's been through crazy life. And it's okay. And I can accept that. But that's processing, So that's how feelings work for me today.
Thank you, Harvey. One thing you said was in your talk there was something to the effect of, I identify this greatly. I have gone about my life trying to buy sobriety, buy recovery on sale, rather than pay the price that is that it actually is, the manufactured retails, whatever MSRP that there is. What are some, do you have any examples of how one can recognize when, you know, for example, if I'm trying to get my recovery and sobriety on the cheap, how can I recognize that that's happening and how can I address it?
So as I said in my talk, you know, a lot of guys start program and they say, you know, either the program itself that they're working, whether it's, you know, ARP support or another program, whatever, they come with some discipline plans and they say, you know, you must go, you should try to get to so many meetings a week and you have to make so many phone calls a day. One person with at least a year of sobriety and your sponsor, you need to journal, whatever, all those discipline things, which are great, really important. If you're not staying sober, then you have to up the you have to up the price. You have to up the amount of time you're putting in, and say, you know what, I need to do more meetings. I need to make more calls. I need to spend more time praying. I need to meditate more times a day. I need to do whatever it takes, and that's the big word: whatever it takes. The price of sobriety has to be whatever it takes, you know. And when you talk about the money and you think about how much I spent at the beginning and thought it, a lot of people do, you know, they go to therapists thinking, oh, that's all I need to do is spend the money on a therapist, or I go to rehab for $50,000 for 45 days or whatever that might cost, you know, and they come out and they relapse within 2 days or a week or a month or whatever. And most of the people I've worked with have had similar results from rehab and often from therapy that doesn't include the rooms and doesn't include the steps. We need each other. This is a we program, but we need to be committed to it. We need to, like, I was a very low bottom when I got here. I shared often, you know, I was seeing escorts two or three times a day. And so for me, you know, I know that, you know, even though I'm almost 7 years sober, I still go to 2, 3, 4 meetings a week, and people would look at me and go, isn't that crazy? You know, my wife thinks I have a new mistress. It's called recovery, you know, and that's something, that's another issue. We could talk about that another time. I know that I have to do everything it takes. At the beginning I did 90 and 90. So 90 and 90, I don't think was all about doing all the work about surround sobriety. I think that was really about, as we spoke about earlier, really exercising the honesty muscle and getting it to a better place. I needed to do a lot of meetings at the beginning and really spend a lot of time being vulnerable, being open, sharing where I was in my life with people who cared and people who didn't judge.
Thank you. All right. I have one more question. If anybody else in the live audience has any other, please type it in the Q&A. My one question is kind of a three-part one. You mentioned the three phrases here. It is what it is. You are who you are, and I am who I am. Each one of those as I reflect on those, has a different acceptance. I have to accept that it is what it is. I have to accept that you, God, are who you are, and that I am who I am, and accept each of those before moving into that. Harvey, how do you do that? How do you accept the situation for what it is? How do you accept God for who he is? How do I accept who I am for who I am?
That was a great question. Thank you. So that came about, I think, as a result of working the steps. The first three steps gave me those the answers to those three. We have a serenity prayer that we say a lot in this program. You know, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, right? That's my life. That's the existence that I live. I don't have control over the weather. I don't have control over the patients that are going to come in to see me today. I don't have control over my wife's mood. I don't have control over anything. The only thing I do have control over is me, right? To accept the courage to accept the things I can change, that's me, right? So number one is, it is what it is I have to accept the world for what it is. I need to accept God for who he is, because, you know, a lot of my addiction was, I lived with a huge resentment to God because I believed that he had abandoned me, that he was impotent, that he was really not able to help me or didn't want to. So I needed to change that. And that's an affirmation of God that I have to say and get to the point where after doing my step two, I have found that God, but I need to remind myself every day that I have found a God who loves me unconditionally, something that was really hard for me to get to because unconditional love was non-existent in my life. So I didn't understand what that meant or how that should feel. So I had to find that God. I had to find a God that is my fan. He's my biggest fan. He's my coach. He wants me to grow. He potentiated me to become the best Harvey that I could be. It's up to me to try to be that person. But I know that God is encouraging me and he's cheering me on every day. And at the end of the day, I do my step 10 and I admit to him where I might have fallen short, where I don't like the word sin, but you know, I miss the mark and I will miss the mark, but it's not, I no longer have that need to be perfect because perfectionism is an obsession and it's part of the disease. It's really not going to be helpful to me at all. So I no longer took the desire to be successful and to be excellent and to do good work and moved it into the craziness of perfection. I took it back and I returned back to me and I can be the best person Harvey can be. And I can say, you know what? I didn't do so great today. And I get good with God before I go to bed. I wake up tomorrow morning and I have a new opportunity to try again. So that's who I am. I am Harvey and I am grateful and I'm a child of God. And I am, as a child of God, I'm in a certain sense royalty because God is a king. So I've learned to self-affirm myself along those lines and to remind myself that I don't need to be perfect and I'm a work in progress. And as a work in progress, I did damn good today.
Awesome. Thank you, Harvey. All right. Before we close up, do you have any final words of wisdom that you would like to share with us before we move into the next final close-up phase of the meeting?
So, yeah, I guess, you know, they always say one of the cliches, one of the slogans they always mention in this, in the program, in all the 12-step rooms is don't leave before the miracle happens. I think that's so true. I have seen so many people who come into the program, don't really invest the amount of time that they need to, you know, make those all those mistakes, blame the program instead of themselves and leave before they find the miracle, before they find the freedom. Because sobriety isn't really what we're looking for. Sobriety sucks. There's a lot of pain in sobriety. I don't recommend sobriety for anyone. But the joy and the freedom, the happiness of being in this program, of finding yourself, finding relationship to God, and finding the connections that we have to the very special people in our lives that God brings us, and to feel that miracle. And it's hard to describe the miracle. It's like trying to describe chocolate. That's how I always bring it. I always say, you know, I can tell you it's sweet, but I can't really tell you what chocolate tastes like. You got to feel it. You got to taste it. But I can tell you it's going to be worth it. So that would be my closing comment.
Thank you so much, Harvey. I really appreciate that. All right. That was a great RICO 12 weekly speaker meeting for all addicts and those wanting to learn more about addiction and the recovery therefrom. If you found value in this or other RICO 12 speaker meetings, please take a moment to go to the podcast platform of your choosing and leave a rating and review. Once again, it helps us work our 12th step by carrying the message of recovery and hope to more addicts who suffer. If you have any other questions and you'd like to ask Harvey, you can relay that through me at RICO12pod@gmail.com. Or you can go and sign up at RICO12.com/forum and join in our community and ask those questions and answer others' questions that may come up. I invite the audience to keep coming back. Come back next week. Our speaker next week will be Robert, a recovering alcoholic, and his topic will be connection, correction, direction, and it's going to be a good one. If you have not yet gone to RICO12.com and submitted your email address, you only need to do it once. Please get on the invitation list so you can join us live each Friday at noon Central Time. Now, Harvey, do you have a recovery prayer that you'd like to have us sent off into the day with?
Well, I already did a third step prayer as part of our closing. Let's do the serenity prayer. I don't do the long version, but if you have it, you can certainly do it if you have it close by, Justin.
Why don't you just send us off with the short version, if you wouldn't mind being the voice there. Thank you.
Okay. Moment of silence for those still sick and suffering inside and outside of these rooms. And inside and outside of recovery. Prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change. Courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not ours, be done.
Amen. Thank you, Harvey. Keep coming back. It works when you work it. So work it. You are worth it. Thanks again, everybody. Have a fantastic week.
Survive the storm.